There we are, Radio Free Palmer at 7:35. Heather, can you hear me? Well, Heather Dune McAdam is with us here. She's the author of Rena's Promise. And, you know, we were talking about this before. Palmer is a farm town, and we are a town that was largely populated by people who came in and during the Great Depression to start a new life here as farmers. And Rena, the subject of your book, came from a farming environment, in some ways very different, in some ways very much the same, isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, she was, farming people are salt of the earth. They're tough people. They are not people that take adversity lightly. Very strong will, strong body, strong spirit. I think that had a lot to do with Rena's resiliency and her ability to survive over 3 years in Auschwitz. She used to say, the girls from Amsterdam just dropped like flies when they arrived in Auschwitz. And the girls that came from, the farm, you're used to getting up at dawn and working in the field all day. That's pretty much what Auschwitz was, only much worse. And so she was certainly hardy peasant stock. I knew Rena. She was in her 70s when I met her, and we used to go for walks in the afternoon after we had worked, and I could hardly keep up with her. She walked so fast. And she and her husband, every single morning into their 80s, played tennis at 6 a.m. for an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
She was really strong.
Yeah, and tell that story if you could about that transport. It was the first transport.
Rena was on the first transport of women to Auschwitz, and it's one of these. It's the cruel irony of war. Hindsight is always 20/20, and of course, Rena actually turned herself in. It was martial law. She was hiding in Slovakia. She was Polish, but her parents had sent her to Slovakia because it was safer. At that point, Slovakia had already been annexed by the Germans. So she was hiding in Slovakia. She was a nanny, and the Germans announced that anybody who was in Slovakia illegally, an illegal immigrant, basically, if a family was caught hiding them, they would be the whole family would be sent to work camps. Mm-hmm. And so Rena, in order to protect the baby that she was the nanny to and the family, turned herself in and seriously, literally believed that she was going to a work camp for a couple of months and then she would get out. She was engaged to be married, and Auschwitz at that point was not Auschwitz that we know today.
Right.
Nobody knew what was coming down the pike, and she figured she was doing the best thing. She felt she was making the moral decision because she was very religious and always believed that God would protect her, and believed that she was doing what was best for the people who had harbored her.
Right, right. Saving their lives. Yeah.
And actually, they ended up escaping. Mm-hmm. They escaped to Switzerland, and they actually had begged her to come with them, but she, for whatever reason, she felt that. She did not want to put them into jeopardy.
Wow.
And so she wrote a letter to her sister saying, I'm going to go to a work camp and please be safe. And her sister got the letter and said, well, I'm going to go turn myself in too. So Rena arrived on the first transport of women into Auschwitz. At that point, Auschwitz was mostly Russian POWs and Polish POWs. There were no Jewish transports. There was one in February 15th that was about 40. I think it was men that had been arrested for various minor crimes, and they were all executed. So that was actually the very first transport, sort of historically. It depends how you define the transports. And then there were 999 young women between the ages of 16 and 22. And they were the first, those were the first Jews in Auschwitz that were, you know, brought in for hard labor. Hmm. And it is, the women who survived more than 3 years in those camps.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah. And it's, and I think most of us know something of the conditions, the executions that were going on and the working conditions.
Yeah. And the women's camp, I mean, what a lot of people don't know, and it's sort of the thing that I'm really trying to raise awareness about, especially, you know, this is Women's History Month in America. And, you know, the statistics of the Holocaust, and it's the truth of any genocide, Rwanda, Darfur, if you can destroy women, you can destroy culture. Because women are the bearers and nurturers of culture. And so it is the science of genocide, to, you know, if you really want to get rid of a race of people, to attack women.
Uh-huh.
And it's a horrible truth. And we certainly don't, you know, it doesn't look good on humanity that's something that we tend to do, but that's certainly the history of war. And you can look at Syria now. I mean, the thing that upsets us so much about Syria today is that, you know, it's women and children that are being bombed.
Right.
You know, it's not just people going out to war. It's whole families. Their homes are being destroyed. So that, you know, that is, if you want to break the spirit of a people, you destroy their families.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, the first transport of women arrives on March 26th, and my what I'm doing is recreating, I'm retracing their journey, and I'm going from across Slovakia and taking a train from Bratislava to Propad, which is just south of the Carpathian Mountains, where Rena actually grew up. And then we take the train from Propad to around the Carpathian Mountains up to Oświęcim, which is where Auschwitz, the museum, and the camps were, and the museum is today. When Rena took this transport, it took her, we believe it took about 4 days. It will take me 10 hours.
And
I will have food, and I
right.
will be able to look out the window, and but I'm really excited to be able to, you know, honor these women's memory, because very few people know about the women of Auschwitz, and 60% more women died in Auschwitz than men, and you know that the working conditions for women were much worse than for men. That is absolutely, you know, historical fact. But you don't really hear that much about women in the Holocaust.
Uh-huh.
You hear about men all the time.
Right, right. And why do you think that is? Is it harder for? I think it was hard for anyone to tell the story. It took a period of time for people to start writing and start talking about
True.
What happened. Is it more difficult for women, or is it something that people weren't willing to listen to?
I think that's the answer to that question has changed over time. Rena, of course, you know, you're looking at a culture. Rena was educated to the eighth grade, which was, that's as far as women were generally educated, especially in farming communities.
Uh-huh.
Her mother made sure that she knew how to read Hebrew, and there's a little story in the book that, you know, her mother says, I'm not going to have my daughters not be able to read the Talmud when they get married, because her mother didn't know how to read. So she wanted to make sure her daughters could read, but, you know, that was the first generation of sort of educating their daughters up to eighth grade and making sure some of them could read Hebrew. So you're talking about an older culture where women did not have the same rights as men, and were not probably encouraged to be heard as much as men.
Uh-huh.
Certainly, education, they were not encouraged to be educated like men were, and so then you also come out of, you know, to modern day, and I did meet, I spoke with one woman who was a survivor from the first transport, and I asked her if she would like to be on a talk show with Rena. And she said, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want anybody to know. And she was married to a rabbi in Columbus, Ohio. And nobody in the synagogue knew that she was on the first transport of women to Auschwitz. So I think a lot of that also is that the longer you survive, the harder it is to talk about.
Oh, interesting.
And that's sort of the nature of trauma, traumatic memory. People who survive something for a short period of time, it is easier to talk about it because you can remember before the horror, right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
But if you are in something for a really long time, often it's just too horrible. And I think many of the women just never wanted to speak about it or think about it again. Rena was an exception. And she was constantly telling it to her mother in her mind. So when she met me, it was like a dam burst, and she just poured her heart and her soul out to me, and I was the recipient of that story.
Okay, right. And that's how the book Rena's Promise came to be.
Yes, that's it. Right. That's it. I wanted my readers to feel like I did, sitting across from this woman and on a couch in front of a fireplace and listening to her story. And one of the things my publisher loved about the book, and it's one of the things that I really cherish about my relationship with Rena, is, you know, Rena and I are 40 years apart in age. I'm a Gentile. I am American. And there is this connection between us. We had a beautiful, beautiful relationship. We were really close friends. And the publisher, my editor, really wanted the reader to feel that and to feel like they had a special relationship with Rena as well. She was one of the most wonderful. I mean, she just, you know, was huggy, huggy, kissy, kissy. Hmm. She knew everybody at the grocery store. She knew everybody at the deli. She, you know, it was very old European sort of, you know, greeting people, strangers on the street. How are you? Hello. She always greeted people on the street. And she just had this really big heart. And David, we were saying something just before I came on about Rena as a human, as a real person. Mm-hmm. This is a woman who, you know, she was funny. She had a great sense of humor. And people are always sort of shocked that, right, you know, a Holocaust survivor can have a sense of humor, like there's something wrong with that. And, you know, that's one of the things I just adore about this individual, is she was just so alive. And if there's any, you know, if there's a message that comes out of her story, and her sister always said the same thing, the message of Auschwitz is to live life to its fullest every single day. Don't squander one second of life because it is precious. And a lot of people think the message of Auschwitz is horror and sorrow, and, you know, I'm sort of on this campaign now for us to change how we educate young people about the Holocaust, because they get really turned off if it's all horror, and if you don't come away from it feeling, you know, the strength of the human spirit. And Rena's story, one of the things I love about it is that, you know, she wanted to pay homage to every single person who helped her survive. A Polish Gentile woman gave her a potato, snuck her a potato on the death march, she wanted to make sure that that woman was named, listed, and she'd say, I don't know her name, you know, and mm-hmm. I feel so bad, I didn't know her name. And you know, there was a couple of Polish men who snuck them quinine because her sister had malaria, Haniak and Bolek. And you know, I remember her saying, you know, oh, I hope they read the book and they know that Danka and I survived. And so every single person, German, Polish, you know, she wanted every single person to be recognized, because without those random acts of kindness, she and her sister would never have survived.
Well, Yeah, and that's really good to hear. That's the other side of the story. I mean, we on one hand, we know these things happen because people let them happen and they get sucked in. But on the other hand, they're always the ones to remember who go against the grain, go against the current.
Yeah. And, yeah.
So, and you
so
mentioned
essential.
That. Yeah.
We need people who do that, you know, who think for themselves and who act. I mean, it's not just about thinking; it's about taking action.
Uh-huh.
And which is, of course, always much harder. We can always think, "Oh, I should have done that," but you know, it's the people who actually do something that make the difference.
Right. Well, having met you, I haven't met Rena, of course, but having met you, I can see how the two of you would get on, because I would say the same thing, the same love of life and laughter that you have. It sounds like she had the same, and there was a connection there. And it is a paradox that many of the people who really study the Holocaust are ones who love life, and they're not it's certainly tragic and sad and a powerful and harsh moral lesson, but there's something more there.
Yeah, and I think that I've been told I've had people, I get called pretty awful things, like hoaxer.
Oh,
is that right?
Oh.
Holla hoaxer. And I, somebody like on YouTube, because we have some videos of Rena on YouTube, they said, there's no way that this can be true because she makes a joke. And I was like, you're supposed to survive Auschwitz and never make a joke? I mean, what? Sorry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people tend to think, sort of paper cutout. And Rena, in her lovely sort of sense of humor, she always called those people, she'd go, "Woe is me, I was in Auschwitz." and every time she'd hear somebody start, doing the, "Oh, it was so horrible," she'd be like, "Oy vey, I was in Auschwitz," and then, people say to her, "Well, how long were you?" "I was there for 3 months. How long were you there?" And she's like, "Eh, 3 years."
Oh. Yeah. So that's, yeah. But there is I love it. And there are these people who really are actively trying to deny that this happened at all. And I guess you got in the middle of that.
It's actually one of the things I do in the evening. I'm rather active on Twitter. People can follow me at Heather Dune on Twitter.
Okay.
And I do, I sort of do a tweet scan of what people are talking about in terms of the Holocaust. And last night there was a bunch of kids on there saying, "Oh, I got to go study for the Holocaust." And I'm looking for the tweet that I sent out on it, because it was very funny. So here's Naomi Clark 1D. She's complaining that she's got to read, her Holocaust history. And, of course, yesterday there was somebody who's running for Congress was saying how the Holocaust never happened. So I tweeted back to her, "At least you're reading your history. The idiot running for Congress says the Holocaust never happened. Must never have read his." And she retweeted me, and she was absolutely in hysterics,
Oh,
she comes back and she says, "Yeah, at least I can read." and then somebody else is saying, "I'm working on my Holocaust lit homework and writing a paper," and I tweeted to her, "I love reading that you're writing your Holocaust paper. If you have any questions, ask me." And she comes back, I'm gonna ask you questions." So I try to, one of the things I sort of want, I want kids to sort of get a connection to Holocaust, because the younger they are, the further away it is.
Right.
And I'll go on Twitter and I'll see kids heading to the Holocaust Museum, and I'll give them a little, you know, they'll be like, oh, I'm so depressed, I'm going to the Holocaust Museum, and I'll tell them a little joke about Rena, or I'll say, you know, Rena wouldn't want you to be depressed. You know, she wants you to, you know, by you remembering, you know, what she went through, she feels great joy. You know, like you're easing her pain. Or if somebody's really, really down at, Rena, of course, was at the opening of the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and I called her up and I said, how was it, Rena? It was this big event. And she goes, well, there wasn't a water fountain on every corner in Auschwitz.
Oh.
I mean, only a Holocaust survivor could say that at a Holocaust Museum.
Yes. Oh, that's good. So I wanted to repeat the Heather Dune, your tweet address.
This is Heather Dune, like sand dune.
Okay, D-U-N-E. And you're on Facebook, and you're on the web at renaspromise.com.
Yep, renaspromise.com. And we have a fan page that is Rena's Promise on Facebook. The new edition has just come out on ebook. And has just, a shout out to Kindle. It's so wonderful. It's just given, the book has been out for 15 years and was really well reviewed. And we have a whole new life through the ebook system. Uh-huh. And it's great because we're reaching people all over the world. And it's such, you know, one of the things I love about Rena's story is it's such a positive message. You don't finish reading the book and feel like slitting your wrist, you know? Yeah. You finish the book and think, wow. Human beings can be really awful, and they can be really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the midst, a friend of mine who's a Buddhist monk said, out of hell came this beautiful voice, and that was Rena's Promise. And you know, she is this, you know, just this amazing chutzpah and spirit. And you come away from her story feeling like, wow, humanity is not that horrible. We do horrible things, but we also do really wonderful things. And of course, that's where we need our focus to be, is helping each other and doing wonderful things for each other. And I think that's sort of the mistake we make in terms of Holocaust teaching, is that we focus on the bad. So what I'm planning on doing when I do the Promise Vigil is, you know, I keep saying it's like I want to bring this light into Auschwitz. I want to enter Auschwitz with this idea that we're here to embrace the lives of those women who were on that first transport, and to remember them, and to be, you know, to go there with just a real sense of love and gratitude for who they were and what they gave us. You know, in terms of survival, and in terms of if we learn our lesson, then we don't have to repeat the past, you know? And so that's really what, you know, I'm going to be tweeting. I'm going to use the social networks to recreate this journey, and people will be able to see, you know, the countryside that the transports went through, which is actually quite beautiful countryside. Rena couldn't see it. I'll be using historical facts that I've, you know, been able to, from the book and also from additional research, and sort of share this other perspective, that by embracing that past, and by remembering and honoring those women, you know, we are doing them a service, you know, and we do womankind a service. We remember, you know, the place of women in history, which I think is really important. Being a woman, I would think that, but.
Well, yes, well, wonderful. And so it's 8 o'clock. It's KVRF Sutton, Radio Free Palmer. We're listening to Talking with Heather Dune McAdam, the author of Rena's Promise. And she's talking about the journey she's planning to follow the route of the first transport of Jewish women to Auschwitz. And so, Heather, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I just give a shout out to everybody in Palmer in Alaska. I'm psyched that we are all the way up in Alaska, and I'm really excited. What we should say is that Fireside Book is going to be doing a promise vigil, right?
Yes, yes.
You're going to do something at the bookstore, which is really awesome. And that's the other thing that we have people all over the world that are going to be lighting candles in honor of these women, and I'm asking people to take photographs of their vigils. I have a friend who lives in Wales who's going to light a candle by the river where he lives, and everybody's going to take pictures, and we're going to put them up on a map, and there's somebody in Japan, and now we've got Alaska, and, you know, we're going to send this light all the way around the world.
Wonderful.
I think that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Heather, thank you so much.